Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Again, here at Radio.com in Boston, it's New England Lifestyles. I'm Mike Mullaney. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the last year has been a lot of financial challenges. You know, folks have lost jobs. People have had pay reductions. People are struggling to pay rent. There's always a lot of challenges with financial things, and this has been one of the hardest years in many, many years. On the flip side of this, the way society has changed, we're spending more and more and more money, and a lot of people are getting a lot in danger. I mean, I saw a statistic last year that said that last year was the first year in history where people paid more money going out to eat than they did in supermarkets. So people are spending a lot. People are struggling financially. There's a lot to talk about bankruptcy-wise, money-wise, how to keep yourself out of tax problems. So joining us on the phone right now is a debt expert and a bankruptcy attorney. His name is Sean Wright. He's the author of a book called Bankruptcy, Not as Scary as You Think. Sean, welcome to Radio.com here in Boston.
Mike, pleasure. Happy to join on.
A lot of folks are in financial issues. I know that most people say, hey, you know, you got to live within your means, live with a budget. Everyone should have a budget, check things off, make sure your savings enough. But the reality is people generally tend to not do that. I mean, what percentage of people do you think in this country are running into problems? It's got to be pretty high.
Yeah, it's definitely high, Mike. It's hard to say. Unemployment compensation rolls are very high right now, and a lot of people are just barely making it and don't really have a good idea of the future with 2021.
I know a lot of folks, you know, this is one of those things where people who get into financial problems. I mean, everyone has the American dream. People buy things, and then people get into problems where they cannot afford what they've done. I know a lot of folks, you know, if you buy a house that's just a little bit out of your means and one of your, you know, say your partner suddenly loses their job, you can't make those payments. And people can get into serious financial debt. Bankruptcy is something that you hear a lot about. I mean, people always joke about, you know, that great scene in The Office where Michael declares bankruptcy by walking into the office and saying, I declare bankruptcy. Pretty silly stuff. The idea of bankruptcy, it's a scary word. Talk a little bit about what it is and what actually is entailed when someone gets into enough financial challenge that they have to face that.
Well, you know, basically, it starts with taking inventory of your finances. You know, there's two types of personal bankruptcy, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. You have to be eligible based on your income for Chapter 7, which is straight bankruptcy, simply getting rid of credit cards, medical bills, et cetera. And some people, for example, who the rules differ from state to state, but, you know, some people who have maybe too much income based on their family size might not be eligible for Chapter 7, and therefore they would do a payment plan type of bankruptcy, which still could help them out quite a bit. So they might only pay off their credit cards, 20, 30, 40%, and then the balances are written off. I think the biggest myth with bankruptcy is that it's going to ruin my credit forever, and that's not the case. I have people who complete bankruptcy cases, they finish them up successfully, and then 2 years later, they can buy a house and get and qualify for a mortgage at 3% rate. So I see that day in, day out. I ask anybody, any of your listeners there, if they're working in the mortgage industries, they can confirm that. This is something that happens all the time. So it doesn't ruin your credit report rating, rather. It is on your credit report, but as a year or two goes on, most of my clients have, former clients have, credit scores in the 700s, even after bankruptcy, only a year or two later. And
wow.
So because think about it, it gets rid of all the bad credit notations. If you've missed payments for 2, 3, 4 months and credit cards have charged off and now they've been sold to debt collection companies, your credit score is probably tanked. You know, it's probably at high 400s or 500s. Well, a bankruptcy, what it does is it clears off all those bad notations. They're gone. So immediately your credit score has been improved after the bankruptcy case. And then it's a matter of just building good credit habits. Whatever credit you use, I just tell people go out and get a small credit card, use it for very small purchases, pay it off immediately, and they'll see their credit score continue to climb. So I tell every single person, 2 years from now, you should have 720, 740 credit, and that's what happens.
And that's pretty interesting because, again, you know, it looks, anytime anyone brings up that word, it's like, you know, one of those taboo words you want to hold up a crucifix and say, get away from me, bankruptcy. But, I mean, the reality is this is probably, if you ever had to face something like this, this is probably a year where, you never say there's a good time for bankruptcy, but because of so many financial problems across the board, I mean, so many challenges with mortgages, so many problems with, you know, paying rents and stuff like that, people getting into problems because of what has happened pandemic-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Is this actually a better time to do something like this than other years?
Well, we kind of predict that in the second or third quarter of this year, 2021, there's going to be a big uptick in personal bankruptcy filings. And it's just going to be, you know, right now there's a foreclosure moratorium in many states. Evictions have been paused. So we really haven't taken stock of what's coming down the road here in terms of people being so far behind on bills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like the word bankruptcy, yes, it is packed with emotion. But, you know, look at it. What are the reasons? People losing jobs, people losing income because they can't work the extra hours, maybe people having medical problems and they can't work. You know, it's not necessarily they were bad people. I mean,
right.
they got into debt thinking, well, I'm going to be able to pay it because I'll simply get an extra job or work extra hours. It was, you know, I think people were inherently optimists. But the COVID-19 has proven that our optimism has a brick wall sometimes. And so, you know, it's tough to get around that. Just, you know, jobs just aren't there. People want to work, but it takes more than just a wish. So.
Absolutely. And again, if you're just tuning in to New England Lifestyles, I'm Mike Mullaney, and we're on the line with debt expert and bankruptcy attorney Sean Wright. He's the author of a book called Bankruptcy, Not as Scary as You Think. And while we chat, you can check out SeanWrightLaw.com. And that's Sean with an A-W and Wright with a W. So SeanWrightLaw.com. The idea of, you know, there are perceptions about what happens in bankruptcy. And people are like, well, if I, you know, declare bankruptcy, I'll lose my house, I'll lose my car, I'll lose everything. Talk us through what the reality of what is eligible to be lost and where you end up in a bankruptcy.
So it's pretty rare that someone would lose a car. I've been handling bankruptcy cases for 25 years. I've never seen that happen. Your car lender, if you have a loan on it and you file bankruptcy, you just continue to make the loan payments and they're going to be fine. In terms of if you're a homeowner, it depends on the rules in your state as to how much equity is going to be protected. But here's the thing. If you meet with a local bankruptcy attorney, you sit down and they can go over the local rules in your state and tell you exactly how much equity is going to be protected when you file, because you need to have a game plan. People need to have some strategy, and we call these game plan consultations. It's a first meeting. We go over a person's income, their bills, and we have a strategy. And then I tell them, okay, this is what's going to happen. This is the next step, and then the following step, and the following step. So there really aren't many surprises. It's not like somebody files bankruptcy and then says, oh, my gosh, I have no idea what's going to happen next. No, their attorney should tell them exactly what's going to happen. And there were very few surprises in bankruptcy court. So it's
interesting that you say, you know, you need to have a plan. And I always make this, you know, it's like the idea of watch, you know, you're from Pittsburgh area, and I know that there's a lot of passion for football. We're from New England. We love our football. You see a successful team go out there. You very rarely, you know, Tom Brady doesn't just go out there and wing it. There's a game plan in place, you know, back when we had Tom Brady. It still hurts here in New England. But, you know, that's why people win, because you've got great coaches and you've great players who set out a strategy, and that is why they are successful. You cannot succeed without a strategy. It's pretty simple stuff, but people need to understand you can't wing it. You can't wing your finances. You cannot wing all these things.
Right. And so the you know, this can be just a one-time decision to file bankruptcy and just deal with your finances, because on the flip side, what are the alternatives? Well, you hear a lot about debt settlement, these debt settlement.
I did want to bring those up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the problem there is, you know, they have a very low success rate. Experts have estimated that success rates of those programs is less than 5%. And so, and when you enter into a debt settlement program with one of those companies, their hopes is that in the second or third year, they're going to be able to negotiate a reduction on the overall balance. Well, you've got to pay taxes on those amounts that they settle. So I'll give me an example. Let's say, you know, John has a Discover card bill of $5,000. He goes into the debt settlement program. Maybe all of his credit cards are $30,000, but let's just pick the Discover card. Maybe in year two or three, they reach a settlement with Discover where they pay them $2,800. Okay, so there's been a reduction of $2,200. Now he has to pay taxes on that $2,200. He's going to get a 1099-C tax form, cancellation of debt tax form, and he has to address that on his tax return the next year. So, you know, they should be telling folks that in bankruptcy, the debt is wiped out. So you have no cancellation of debt income. It's a discharged debt. So all of the alternatives have to be disclosed. You know, folks, you know, they need to learn about what their legal rights are and also their legal duties. And, you know, there is no one panacea for everyone. You know, if the old saying is if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah.
And so, bankruptcy, it's not a solution for everyone. It's a tool in the toolkit, but you don't use one tool for every single job. And so, you know, it's just going to depend.
You mean I can't use a hammer to get that screw out of the door?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Use the sledgehammer, right?
That's what it feels like sometimes today. You made a point that, you know, you hear in a lot of these debt consolidation commercials saying the IRS is easy to negotiate. What's the reality of dealing with an IRS tax problem?
Well, glad you asked. That's another thing I do a lot of, and I've actually written a book on the IRS taxes as well. So that is a legitimate program. It's called the Offer and Compromise Program, but it's not like negotiating a credit card settlement. It's a formal, you know, paperwork-driven program where, you know, you would submit the offer to the IRS, but I would say on average there's going to be 100 pages of paperwork. They want to know every single bank account you have, plus they want to see statements. They want to know every investment account. They want to know if you own real estate and have equity. So they look at all of your income, and they look at all of your assets, your equity assets, to determine if the tax debt is collectible. And by law, if you have a tax debt that you could, by their accounting, pay it off in 6 years, then you're not going to be a candidate for an offer and compromise.
Wow.
So yes, the IRS does settle tax debts for pennies on the dollar, but not for everybody. It's more of a hardship program.
Gotcha. And again, we're talking to Sean Wright, author of the book Bankruptcy, Not As Scary As You Think. SeanWrightLaw.com is the website. Again, you know, we talked about managing debt, but in order to move ahead, you really have to be budgeting. What are the tips you can give to people for, you know, trying to get through getting used to a budget and, you know, moving ahead from the challenges they've had financially? What are some of the things you can suggest to folks?
Well, there are professionals out there who there's actually nonprofit groups out there that can meet with folks to discuss their finances and do kind of a money management strategy, and those are called Consumer Credit Counseling Services, CCCS. They're all over the country, and they can offer a sort of a budgeting game plan. But I think the step one is going to be doing that inventory. Step, where are all your bills? Where are all your bills going? And I just had a call this morning from a prospective client. I need to know, all right, every single credit card, how much is the balance and what's the minimum payment? And go down the list and we do an inventory, because a lot of folks, if things get too bad, they don't want to know. They hold their hands in front of their eyes and say, oh, I don't want to look at my credit report. My credit report looks ugly. Yes, it might be ugly, but I need to know. You need to know. It's important. That's step one.
Yeah, it's like when people don't want to look at a mirror because they think they'll look fat. Guess what? Maybe looking in the mirror is going to help you up, because you're not going to like what you see and you make a change. It's like you can't avoid these things.
Exactly. 100%. So it's just important for step one to know what your situation is.
What is the most common dopey thing people are doing with money that is it just sets off a red flag and you say to them, you need to stop doing this?
Well, I think the number one of the thing that really, that's a good question. I think when people look at their retirement plans as a piggy bank, in other words, well, I have credit card bills, I'm just going to take a loan from my 401k and pay those off. No, don't look at that. I mean, that retirement plan is there for when you're retired. There's a reason they set up retirement plans. It's not to pay off credit card bills. And so that's, I would say, a huge red flag that somebody has serious financial problems when they're going to consider that type of an option. Yeah, and they need to seek professional advice.
Yeah, because if you think it's a problem now when you're at working age with money, can you imagine if you run out of money when you're 72?
Exactly.
Not good. All right, well, I appreciate your time again. You can connect with Sean Wright at seanwrightlaw.com. And again, the book is Bankruptcy, Not as Scary as You Think. Debt expert, bankruptcy attorney, Sean Wright. I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us here in Boston.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Welcome back to New England Lifestyles here at Radio.com in Boston. Appreciate you being here and listening as we talk every week to those making a difference in our community. And we want to let you know how you can make a difference by supporting some organizations really doing some good work. Last year, we had the pleasure of meeting the folks from the Jeremiah Programs, which is a program which is many places, but it's in Boston and it's working beautifully. And we're going to get an update now about the organization, what they do, how they're doing it. And we're also going to talk to someone who has benefited from the program. So first off, we want to introduce Chastity Lord. Welcome back to New England Lifestyles, Chastity.
Mike, it's a pleasure to be back. Great to hear your voice. It's been quite a year. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, certainly a year that, it is what it is. A lot is... we could do a whole show on just what happened since we last spoke, but let's focus in on what your program is, what it's all about. So obviously a lot has changed and a lot has moved and a lot has gone on, but first off, give us the 101 on what the Jeremiah program is, how you guys put together what you do, how you run the program, and what you hope to accomplish for folks here in Boston.
Fabulous. Once again, just thanks so much for the invitation. It's always great to talk about these incredible sheroes, single moms experiencing poverty. But Jeremiah Program is a national organization. It's been around 20 years. We supported over 4,000 moms and kids over those past 20 years. But ultimately what we do is we create a space for moms experiencing poverty, single moms specifically, be supported as they pursue socioeconomic mobility within their families. And we do that through five key pillars. We ensure that a mom is able to pursue college or career vocation. We create a safe and stable environment around early child care. It's really hard to pursue education when you don't feel like your kid's safe. The third lever is around affordable and safe housing, ensuring that moms have access to affordable housing. And then our last two pieces, Mike, is really around creating a space for moms to be in conversation with each other around who they are, where they've been, and where they desire to go through our kind of empowerment programming in life skills. And then the last is really centering moms as kind of these architects of change agents for their families, for their community, and if I could be so bold to say, our country. And we do that through kind of building a supportive community. It's not just what the organization is bringing to bear, but what happens when you actually get out of the way and create a space for moms, single moms experiencing poverty, to be in conversation with each other. It's ultimately a program around celebrating, supporting, partnering with single moms and their kids to disrupt generational poverty through two key levers, housing and education. A mom doesn't have to decide, do I bet on myself or do I bet on my kid? We actually say that's a false frame. You can do both.
I agree with you. I think it's the way you laid that out was beautiful, because when it comes down to it, the idea of how do you break that cycle is you do it through giving people a path by which they can not only have a job but a career and safety and housing and having a supportive environment. There's so much that goes into how a person can succeed. And, you know, over the years, you see the isolation that a lot of single moms feel. It's like they make a decision. Do I raise my kids or do I go on for my career? I can't do both. And when in reality, you can if you create the right, great environment. And, you know, the idea of how important moms are, it's just overwhelming. I mean, I'm lucky enough to live in a home where my wife works. My wife is a refugee who came here and, you know, without a penny from Southeast Asia. Her family was able to create an environment of safety and strength for her, and she was able to overcome and really become something special. She raised her family, she has a career, and she was able to do so because she was able to access the education and have, you know, the access that everyone has. And I think it's just so important that people have the ability to have their children safely taken care of while they pursue a path out of, you know, the poverty, and generational poverty is real.
You know what, Mike, you know, one of the things, you know, we were joking about this past year, but this past year has been just mobilizing for everyone, but it has disproportionately impacted. There's been a poverty tax disproportionately on women, in particular women of color, in particular single moms. You know, a jobs report just came out last week. The number of women who have found themselves without jobs, especially in the direct service, retail, hospitality industry. Oftentimes, those experiencing poverty, that is where they sit. And the demand and the response and the need for Jeremiah Boston has just increased threefold. In fact, we are going to be increasing the number of women that we support by three times just here in Boston in 2021. We anticipate we will be supporting about 150 moms and kids by the end of the calendar year, not just trying to navigate through this moment, but trying to be deeply responsive to this moment and understanding kind of where the crux of this sits. Everyone's being impacted, but it's very, very important for everyone to know and remember that women, especially women of color, especially female-led households, single moms, experiencing poverty, this has been just devastating.
Now, and it's an interesting, you know, you make that point, which is so important. And we, you know, we saw something for the first time that a lot of people didn't realize, is that a lot of these folks who are in places that are deemed, you know, expendable positions end up being the most vital positions in our communities during this pandemic. But the other part of it is, you know, if you are, you need to be able to experience a job path, which isn't as disposable sometimes. You know what I mean? You need a path to a career. And this year has been overwhelming to so many folks, with the huge amount of people out of work, with the huge amount of income collapse. I mean, we've seen people facing evictions at an all-time high. And it's a frightening time for so many folks. But as you said, those folks that you directly impact were overwhelmingly impacted. And I see the numbers, which is incredible to me, that you saw a 513% increase in the number of applications submitted to the program in the fall of 2020 over the previous fall. It's stunning, but it really kind of speaks to the fact of what you're dealing with.
Yeah. You know, and I love you know, one of the things I love to be in conversation around is just reminding folks that, you know, just because you are a single mom, just because you're a single mom experiencing poverty, it doesn't mean that you aren't a great mom. It doesn't mean that you don't have dreams and hopes for your family and for your community, because they're not insular within how they think about their leadership, the way that many of us are citizens aren't insular. But, you know, one of the things that we're really, really holding and focusing on is really disrupting this idea that generational poverty, Mike, is not just an economic issue. It's actually a social justice one.
Yeah.
And you talked about how we saw, you know, in our communities this year in just disproportionate numbers. You can't have an unjust housing system without an unjust criminal justice system. You can't have an unjust educational system without an unjust health justice system. We are seeing the intersection of inequity in this really powerful way. And that's what Jeremiah Program is about. It's around being able to see the full identity of moms and their kids. It's around you don't have to hold the fact that you're a mom outside the classroom. We're going to work with you to actually frame and show you how powerful it is for you to bring that in the classroom. You don't have to not think about your role regarding kind of reimagining and reframing what is possible within your community regarding criminal justice. We're going to help you understand that that actually is, you play a critical role in actually influencing and thinking about that policy and that strategy. It's really expanding this leadership tent, this whole idea that there are a group of women, a group of single moms experiencing poverty who really want to not only be at tables of power, they are ready to influence the agenda if we could actually just get out of the way and be in deep support of the power and the incredible resiliency that they possess.
Now, you're right on. And it's amazing what can happen as people kind of acknowledge what the situation is. I mean, when it comes down to it, the impact that people in their community can have when people acknowledge the problems in the community comes together and says, yeah, let's work together on this. The idea that, you know, one of the key parts about your program that I think is so important is the fact that it sets up a community of people who are like-minded, who can support each other. You know, over the years, I've been more than happy to talk on mic about the fact that I was dealing with an issue and I was supported by a group of like-minded people who helped me through their experiences. And it really makes you realize you're not alone, gives ideas on how to, you know, stay on a path that can be successful. And that's a key part of it. You know, there are so many aspects of what you do which really help support the people in the program get through. It's not just, here's the path. It's like, here's some people walking the path with you. Here's some people who have walked the path in the past and have some experience to give to you. That part of any program really is what makes it, you know, beyond three-dimensional.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons we use language like partnering with moms experiencing poverty. They aren't poor. It's not a fixed state of mind. It's around celebrating the fact that they are great moms. All of those things that are unconscious biases regarding kind of poverty that we also want to be in conversation around and really shift the storytelling, shift the narrative. Yes. Many of our moms have lived incredibly challenging lives, but many of our moms have also been able to influence, reimagine, author incredible opportunities for their kids, for their communities as well, especially when they're able to be in conversation with the woman they currently are, they've been, and they desire to be, especially when they are able to someone is partnering with them to make sure that they feel safe. It's really, really challenging to study. It's really, really challenging to dream. It's really, really challenging to think about your role as a citizen when you don't feel safe. And there's so many different narratives out there that make moms, especially single moms experiencing poverty, feel like it's either or. You're either going to be a mom or you're going to work. And what we really want to do is, how do you build that community that you talked about? How do you build a community where moms are able to see themselves and others, not just visibly, but also through storytelling and being able to understand and demystify what is possible within the context of that? How do we find colleges and universities are really interested in not just ensuring that the non-traditional students are sitting in those classroom seats or virtually within the context of this moment, but are really interested in ensuring that they persist and graduate. I mean, it's really kind of creating an ecosystem that is willing to celebrate and hold their brilliance, willing to celebrate and hold the challenges that have been a part of their journeys, and understand that this is a moment in your life. It doesn't define you.
And that's one of the keys, is that everyone gets to a point where they can feel helpless. And the thing is, it's like making people understand that they're not. Everything is temporary. You can always move beyond it. Yep. I've been at those points. I think most people have been. These women are really being given tools to overcome it. And that support network is great. And again, I just want to remind everybody, we're talking with Chastity Lord, the president and CEO of the organization called Jeremiah Program. And you can find out as we talk, go to jeremiahprogram.org/Boston for info about our specific program here in Boston, where you're really making a difference. I mean, your organization's its home base is in Dudley Square. You've got partners. I mean, partners are so important to this. I know one of your educational partners is Endicott College. There's a lot going on, and I want people to listen, to support it. And if you are in a position where you have been comfortable enough to have a support network and have been given support and been able to, you know, achieve your dreams, know that there are people, there are women specifically who want to help those come true. And when we empower a woman's dreams to come true, you know how much further you're going to help their children's dreams come true. And that's how you break that challenge of generational poverty. And again, so it's jeremiahprograms.org.
Yes. And we are recruiting right now. And so if you know women in your lives, houses of worship, give them the information. They can apply online in real time. And we really do celebrate moms. We really do celebrate moms, single moms experiencing poverty. We understand and we hold their brilliance. We hold the challenge. We hold all of that. And we deeply believe in economic mobility. We are willing to be in conversation with moms as they pursue a college education, ensuring and partnering with them to identify stable housing, really strong early childhood, because a great mom really wants to make sure that their child is developing rightly. And we will support them as they kind of move through that journey. It's typically a 5-year program. And in addition to that, we have a fellowship for alumni, et cetera. And so anybody that's listening that knows someone in their lives, please go to jeremiahprogram.org. Anyone that's listening that would love to provide internships for some of our moms, go to jeremiah.org. This really is about a community. This really is about creating a space for us to celebrate and understand that there are different types of leaders all throughout our communities. And single moms experiencing poverty, they need cheerleaders. They need supporters. They need folks who are going to hold all of those identities. As you talked about, Mike.
There's nothing like having someone there who believes in you, because we go through stuff and we all have those moments of weakness where we say, I can't do this. Having those people behind you to support you is special. And, you know, and again, this is an organization which has made such a big impact. And this year being a situation where suddenly everybody was dealing with some financial challenges. Imagine those who are, you know, trying to break that cycle of poverty, who suddenly were dealing with, I mean, the idea that now we're trying to get to the point where people are still, at the risk of evictions from homes. I mean, that housing part of it is one that people don't always think about. But that, I mean, if you don't have stable housing, it's so much harder to do everything. So I think having that as a key part of what you do is so important.
And advocating. And, a JP mom is having challenges with their landlord, providing that legal support to be able to navigate that. You know, we're talking about this challenging time when schools open and close on a dime, understandably, due to the pandemic. What does it mean to the mom who's due to be at work that next day? And her employer may see that she's expendable, making sure that our moms have stipendstocare.com or whatever, but really holding the identity and the reality of where a single mom experiencing poverty needs to be held in that moment. And it's the two-generational framework that makes JP so unique. It is unapologetically focusing on single moms and their kids disrupting poverty.
And the two generational thing is the key here, because it's great to see a mom given the opportunity to pursue her education through college or through a vocation. I mean,
yep.
both are good. I mean, people get the idea yep. that it has to be college. It's not always college. There are several yep. vocations you can go directly to those. And as long as you give someone the tools to do that. But the children, I mean, that's the thing. Kids need to have that early opportunity to learn. You know what I mean? That's one of those things where people don't, the access to education is unequal. And we've seen that, and poverty is a big part of it. You know what I mean? If you have the luxury of books and access to the internet, people take that for granted. It is not always there for folks. And that can be so...
Not at all.
And it could create such a disparity between kids of equal intelligence who just don't have equal access. And that is so important. And taking this two-generational approach is, to me, is just such a key part of it and so innovative.
And we deeply believe in that second generation. Oftentimes they get eclipsed. I appreciate you lifting it up. Yeah. Is that just last year, my Annie Casey Foundation did a recent report. It's a report that's based on many reports that have preceded it, but it's something that just came out last year, just re-anchoring the point. By third grade, if a child yeah. is not reading on grade level, there's a high corollary point to high school completion. We know early childhood development between 0 and 3 years of age disproportionately determines the child's ability to kind of persist and thrive within a traditional academic environment. And so when we talk about this two-generational framework, when we talk about disrupting generational poverty, it's about understanding and holding the critical time that early childhood plays and a generation not being lost or a generation not being eclipsed within the context of that. High-quality childcare is really hard to come by, not just keeping your kids safe, but ensuring that they're thriving, hitting the developmental benchmarks, really entering kindergarten at or above grade level. Those are the ways that we are defining success. That's how we think about that second-generation lever. So thanks for lifting that out.
No, absolutely. And again, ultimately, it comes down to the women you help. And I'm sure you have 100 stories of women, individual stories of women overcoming and seeing them thrive. That must be the best part of this program.
It is. And it's also around what happens when a woman has an opportunity to be supported and held for something that's seen as audacious and improbable as pursuing a college degree, yeah. you know, at 25, you know, with, you know, two children. You have, you know, JP moms like just last year, just there in Boston. Two of our moms graduated in the physical sciences. I mean, those are really incredible things. It's not just acquiring a degree. It's really kind of creating this foundation that allows you to start to build opportunity that can be really transformative for the next generation. It really is around disrupting generational poverty. What has to be true for our country to for it to be predictive? If you're born into poverty, you will stay in poverty. How do you actually start to disrupt that? How do you actually start to look at that kind of model and that cycle within the context of that? Education, as you know, Mike, is not the panacea, but it is by far one of the most incredible levers we still have in this country to really begin that disruption. And not just the college education, but also that early childhood that I was talking about.
No, it's so vital. So again, the website is jeremiahprograms.org. It has all kinds of information. There's a big green give button that I'm encouraging everyone to hit and make a donation today, because it's so important, that contribution. If you're lucky enough to have a little extra money in your pocket, understand that that can really make a difference for folks. And in the idea of just having opportunity, it is not an yep. equal opportunity for everyone. We want to make it much more likely for those in a situation where it's not like there's something wrong with someone who's a single mom. There's nothing wrong with them. They have yep. every dream you have. They have every hope for their children. And you can support them by making a donation right now at jeremiahprograms.org. And I think we're also going to be chatting with a woman who is impacted by the program, which I think is, it's always great to hear the story. So I appreciate, Chester, you're stepping in and talking, and I want to make sure that you know that anytime there's some big news or you want to update us on the situation, we have a free opportunity for you to come on the airwaves and make sure people know about the great work you're doing here in Boston.
I really do appreciate that. Just know that we're committed to the Boston area. We're going to be growing three times this year. And I'll end the way that I started. It's just so important that we all remember that poverty, especially generational poverty, it's not an economic issue. It's actually a social justice one.
It is.
And we have to address it in holistic ways through frameworks like the two-generational model of the Jeremiah program. Thank you so much, Mike. Wishing you all the best. And I hope to take you up on that offer. We're going to have a lot of great stuff to talk about in 21.
I'm excited to be involved. Chastity Lord, again, President and CEO of the Jeremiah Programs, jeremiahprogram.org. Give support. It is so important. Chastity, thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Again, here on radio.com in Boston, Wingin' Lifestyles, we're going to talk more about the Jeremiah Program. Obviously, we just talked to the executive director, but now we want to get back to the people who are really, you know, benefiting from this program and what it does and the opportunities it brings. So joining us on the phone is a member of the Jeremiah Program's Boston campus. Her name is Chanel Martins. Welcome to radio.com, Chanel.
Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you here, and I appreciate you making the time. Obviously, you know, it's pretty great what happens for folks when they're given an opportunity to thrive in a supportive community, given the opportunity to be the best they can be, and given the opportunity to see their children put into an environment where they can succeed. Talk a little bit about your personal experience with the Jeremiah Program here in Boston.
I can say honestly it's been one of the best experiences and programs that I've been involved in. They have a great outreach. They're very supportive. They're very, I would say, just communicative as far as making sure that you are where you're at. You're comfortable. You have all the resources you have. And if there isn't, they definitely find a way to get us to that place where we get everything that we need.
The opportunity to get ahead in life. I mean, a lot of people take it for granted, but sometimes when you're in a situation where money is tough and you have a child, it doesn't make things easy. The program itself, how did you come into working with these folks? And tell me how they took you from the point where you came into the program and where you are now.
So generally how it happens, I was just stumbled upon a flyer that they put around in all local organizations. They also have a website where you can fill out an application. And it's really just general information about you and if you will be the best fit for their program. Once I did that, I was accepted into the program. I started with an empowerment course where they like to have every single mother have this course to help you. Just to realize that, you know, sometimes being a single parent and being alone can be hard enough. So let's find out mechanism or coping skills where we can help us get out of these situations, where it can strengthen us in every environment, when we're in a job surrounding, where we're in school, or even personal family situations. So we take the empowerment course. And once we graduate from the course, we're able to transition to a university or a local college or a state college. And they like to walk us through the whole 4 years to get a bachelor's.
And that's really good stuff. So you tell me about your child.
So I have three children, two daughters and a son.
Wow.
Yeah. So my daughters are 9 and 10 and my son is 2 years old.
Man, that's a lot of kids. I mean, I have three kids and, you know, I'm lucky enough to be married, and with the support of my wife's family and the wife helping me out, we still had a handful. I don't know how you pulled this off. I mean, that is really pretty amazing that you're able to put everything together. So tell me how, you know, That's amazing with three little ones. How were they helped and how were you helped? Where did you start to take courses?
Well, thank you for just acknowledging that. I appreciate it. It is very hard, but I can say because of the Jeremiah program, it's the first time in my life where I feel like, you know what, I'm on the right course. I have the right tools, and I'm learning that it just takes tools and resources, and we're not going to be perfect at it, but knowing that it is reachable. That's, you know, the tools that they give us. Currently, right now, I'm enrolled in Endicott College. I'm an undergrad for business management. I would
nice.
Like to have my own small business.
Nice.
And we're working on that, but that was because of the Jeremiah and myself, you know, having these small Zoom classes where we would talk to local universities where the registration group would come out and reach out to us and, you know, help us fill out these FAFSA forms or help us do these applications. So that was very grateful for Jeremiah to be able to do that for us.
And again, we're talking to Chanel Martins, and she's a single mom participant in the Jeremiah programs in Boston. And again, as we talk about this today, the website to go to is jeremiahprogram.org, and you can get all the information. You can find out information about the Boston program here, which has been so successful. The idea of, I mean, look, we all get into situations where it can feel overwhelming. One of the great things about any success story is finding a network of support, talking to people who have been through what you've done and have advice to offer, talking to experts. You know, I remember when my parents became elderly, suddenly I had to take care of them, and I had no idea what to do. I had none. And there were no real organizations to help me out, and I had to work my way through it, and it was such a challenge. I can imagine even more so being a single mom with three kids. How you get there, the Jeremiah Program's advisors and support network and even the other moms, that must have been so like eye-opening, overwhelming, and just a great feeling of support knowing that you could do it. Talk about that.
Most definitely. That is one of the things that Jeremiah helps us. They let us know, like, you know what, you're not alone. We want to build a sisterhood. We communicate with other women who are in the city who are dealing with the same situations. And you know what? We're here to help each other. We're here to uplift each other. We're here to, you know, if I find out something or a local organization that's helpful for me, let me share this with my sister. Let me get her onto the same boat so we can both thrive together. Because that's the point of Jeremiah. We all want to thrive together. We all want to be aware of our generational issues and continue to pass that on to our children so they can eventually be graduates as well.
There's a phrase in an organization that I am a part of, and it's, you can't keep it unless you give it away. So the idea of kind of spreading what you've experienced to other people is such an important part of things. Letting people know, hey, there is a way to break this cycle. There is a way to get some support. There is a way where you can get ahead in the world. I mean, that's such a huge part of it, isn't it? Being able to succeed and tell others so you can help them get up as well.
Absolutely. Jeremiah advocates that, and that's why it's for sisterhood, and it's not just, you know, me, myself, and I. It's for us. It's for we to do better.
It really is wild what a community can do. And again, the Jeremiah program is, you know, what they do is they don't just try to help a single mom. You know, they try to help a single mom. They try to make sure the kids get access to a supportive environment and a learning environment. Tell me how your kids have done in this program, and if you see a difference in the way that they approach life and the fact that they've been involved in, you know, getting a little extra support. Talk about the kids' impact.
Absolutely. I can say the way that you can better your children is you being aware and you having the knowledge. So that's how you can continue to teach them, like, these tools that I'm learning. If I'm angry, if I'm happy, if I have certain emotions, how do I deal with those emotions when I'm stuck in a situation where, you know, I feel like it's a little tough? How do I get past those? So me learning these empowerment techniques are helping me teach my children, like, when I'm in a hard situation or when I feel like I need to be uplifted, what can I do? How can I help myself? So just giving us tools like that, and being able to give those back to our children, being able to talk, being able to have family time where we, you know, just enjoy each other's time and uplift each other. Because I think in a single parent household, you can kind of feel like you're not being able to meet both aspects, like financially and also emotionally. So they help us with those tools to teach those to our children as well.
I know that you mentioned that you're attending courses at Endicott College. That is a beautiful campus. It's not far from where I live. It's such a beautiful spot. Tell me how that college experience has been. I mean, did you always want to go to college? And how does it feel now? And how do you feel about reaching your goals?
Honestly, I did want to go to college, but obviously three kids, it got a little tough and it got a little overwhelming. But Endicott definitely made it easier for me. They made it more accessible for me. The Zoom classes, especially during the pandemic, it was, you know, we're not on campus, but having the fact that we can get these Zoom courses, we have professors that are always available to talk to us, to send us emails, to stay very intact with us. So that was very awesome as them as well. And I'm just new. I'm an undergrad, so I'm getting used. I'm three semester's in, but I can say so far it's been a great experience.
Well, again, it's great to see that you're achieving, and it's really, you know, you can hear about a program, but we can get to talk to someone who has been really helped out. Where do you live, by the way, Chanel?
I live outside of Boston.
Nice. Well, I was someone who, you see the access to stuff is not always the same. And the fact that this can kind of level playing fields for folks is wonderful. And the fact that you're able to achieve some of these goals through this program, it speaks volumes to what the Jeremiah program has done. And it's done this in many locations around the country, but we're lucky to have a program here in Massachusetts, in Boston specifically. So again, I want to advocate for folks as you hear the story of Chanel and what she has done. I encourage you to go to jeremiahprogram.org. When you get to the homepage, you'll see a big green button, which is give. And the reality is when you can help someone lift themselves, it's not like giving someone money and saying, go do it. You know, you're supporting a program. You're supporting a whole community of people who are trying to lift themselves, their kids. And it really enhances the community when this happens. So go to jeremiahprograms.org. If you can make a donation this morning, it would be wonderful because you really are helping the entire community. And again, Chanel Martin's wonderful to hear that you've done what you've done. And, you know, one more pitch. Why do you love Jeremiah Programs?
Because it gave me life again. It gave me the fact that I'm able to do this, and I don't have to do it alone. I just need the resources and the tools, and I'm able to get everything I want in life for me and my children.
Well, it's great stuff. Chanel, congratulations on where you're going. I know you're going to achieve your goals, and hopefully this works out. And again, the Jeremiah program's really had a huge impact. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here at radio.com in Boston on New England Lifestyle, Chanel.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.